ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् Tato Jaya Mudiraye. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 23, The Song of the Avanti Brahmana. Text number 22. Lava Janma Mara Pratyam Manusham Tad Dvijagriyatam Tad anadritaye swartam gananti yatyashubham gatim. I'm going to do the word for word before you chant, so you know what you're chanting. Labha, having attained. Janma, the birth. Amara, by the demigods. Pshartyam. Pratyam, prayed for, manusham, human, tut, and in that, dvija agra yatam, the status of being the best of the twice born, tut, that, anadritya, not appreciating, ye, those who, swartam, their own best interest, gananti, destroy, yanti, they go, ashubham, to an inauspicious, gatim, destination. Those who obtain human life, which is prayed for even by the demigods, and in that human birth become situated as first-class brahmanas, are extremely fortunate. If they disregard this important opportunity, they are certainly killing their own self-interest and thus achieve a most unfortunate end. Please repeat. Those who obtain human life, which is prayed for even by the demigods, and in that human birth become situated as first-class brahmanas, are extremely fortunate. If they disregard this important opportunity, they are certainly killing their own self-interest and thus achieve a most unfortunate end. Purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, Hazi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments as follows. Human birth is better than that of the demigods, ghosts, spirits, animals, trees, lifeless stones, and so forth, because the demigods simply enjoy celestial pleasures, and in other forms of life there is excessive suffering. It is only in human life that one deeply considers one's ultimate benefit in life. Human birth is therefore more desirable than even that of the demigods. Within human life, the position of a high-class brahmana is certainly most desirable. If a brahmana, however, gives up the devotional service of the Lord and works hard like a shudra simply for the prestige of his community, he is certainly on the platform of material sense gratification. The special qualification of the brahmanas is the spiritual knowledge by which they recognize every living entity to be an eternal servant of the Lord. A brahmana, free from false ego, thus feels himself lower than a blade of grass and tolerantly offers respect to all living entities. All human beings, and especially the brahmanas, should avoid becoming killers of their own self-interest by neglecting Krishna consciousness, the loving service of the Lord. Such neglect paves the way for future suffering. Have you ever had a situation where you were put in danger and then just afterwards you thought, maybe I should take my life more seriously? Yes. And these kinds of incidents can be considered teachable moments. The Bhagavatam says, Shukadev says in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that a better one moment of full consciousness than a lifetime which is simply wasted on sense gratification, the brain calculating how to adapt to the material environment and try to avoid suffering. But if one has a moment of clarity, it's very valuable. In fact, that deep feeling that I should become serious. And it may be in a moment when one is humiliated or there's a dangerous situation or one's received some severe chastisement. And for that few seconds, the false ego abates and one's pure sense of sincerity is ushered in. And in that moment, if one could preserve that, wouldn't that be something? To be able to take that very moment of clarity and sincerity of purpose and maybe put it into one of Pranahari's little bottles that he uses for his experimental perfumery downstairs, the mad monk. And if you could get that and take it regularly, then what kind of impetus would one have? Oftentimes, chanting japa, one may think, oh, I'm drowsy. I'm very sleepy. It's a physical ailment. But actually, if someone came, tapped you on the shoulder and said, your car is being towed, then you'd immediately wake up. Or if they said, hey, your uncle called, you just won $1 billion, you'd also immediately wake up. What is it? If there's pizza, you'd also wake up. And so the condition of being bored or unaware or unconscious in the material world is actually a dangerous situation for humans. Humans are asked by the Shastra to wake up. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu keeps saying, wake up, wake up. And the Vedas say, now's the time to wake up. And in fact, the whole process of spiritual life is compared to the waking up from a dream. And as one gradually comes out of the dream, one realizes one's real responsibilities and duties, and life has some excitement to it. And waking up to the responsibility of human life is quite exciting to see the potential. In fact, those who do become as greedy for spiritual life as materialists are for advancing their material assets. Mike Milliken, who was the king of the junk bonds back in the early 80s. None of you remember, you're too young. But I read some articles about him. He made billions of dollars in selling junk bonds. And he lived in Los Angeles, which is unusual for those who trade on the stock market, because most of them live in New York. There's a three-hour time difference. So he'd wake up at 1 or 2 in the morning in order to be ahead of the curve when the stock market would open early in the morning. And he did it for years and thus developed an empire and became very wealthy. And materialistic people have a certain drive, but so does those who wake up to their spiritual prospect in life. In fact, in the Gita, Krishna says that such people, same impetus, but they're focused in different areas. Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pashito mune. That what is nighttime for the materialistic person is a time of awakening for the devotees, and vice versa. The materialists think that spiritual people are wasting their time. In fact, even devotees sometimes, if they fall into maya, then they think, oh, I wasted 10 years of my life chanting japa and cultivating spiritual knowledge. And those who realize the value of chanting Hare Krishna, they see a moment lost in material pursuit to be a waste of time. They see that the material nature is going to provide anyway. And as Narada Muni says, he says, what's the verse I'm thinking of? It's next to Chek Vasudharmam Chananam Bhujam Harer. And then he says that we're wandering throughout the universe. He said, don't wander throughout the universe, trying to adjust your situation. Like they used to say back when I was a kid, they don't try to adjust your TV set. It's not the fault of the TV set, it's the station. It's not your local, it's not a local problem, it's systemic. They would say, don't try to adjust your television set. So Narada Muni says, don't try to adjust your situation because it's a systemic problem and you're going to get what you get. It means that in due course of time you're going to get what you're going to get because of past momentum. And you don't have to work hard to obtain it. It comes naturally of its own course. He says, just like you get bad luck without asking for it. Right? Did you ever ask for it? You wake up in the morning, please let something bad happen today. No. Everyone says, please something good happen today. But bad things happen and good things happen. They come of their own accord, Narada says. So don't try so hard for these things. Do try hard for a spiritual awakening and to advance yourself. And in the Padyavali, there's a verse that says, just as a materialist becomes very greedy for material life, meticulous, in fact, in calculating how much wealth he has and how much wealth he'll have in the future, and making sure that it's getting the best interest rate. There's all kinds of ways to adjust that through organizing your taxes, taking out IRAs, and investing in the right things at the right time, dollar cost averaging, and many different ways that one can absorb one's mind. There are unlimited financial products available nowadays, and one can become really absorbed in trying to get the best return on one's investment and be situated for the future. And so in this verse from the Padyavali, it is said that the devotee should be similarly concerned with spiritual assets. Just as a materialist counts and recounts his coins, in fact, he says, just as a miser counts and recounts his coins, the devotee should count and recount his shlokas and the number of mantras that he's chanting, and covet those, and have the same ambition that a materialistic person does. Try to be like Mike Milliken. Be like Mike. Get up early in the morning at 1 o'clock. If you live on the other coast, try to get as much as you can out of life. And in this verse today, we're hearing how valuable human form of life is. Doesn't it make you feel better? I'll tell you a couple of things. One is we heard from Krishna in the 11th canto. We read the whole 11th canto together at Govardhan 2 years ago. And there we found that Krishna likes humans. So cheer up. He likes you. He likes you because you're a human. And humans have a full potential to realize the absolute truth. They don't have much potential for anything else. And that's by arrangement. They try to do things like jump off of cliffs and put on artificial wings and go to the bottom of the ocean and crack their head doing so oftentimes. But human life, it's nice to know, is allotted specifically and is perfectly appointed to develop the highest spiritual consciousness better than the demigods. Better than the ghosts, better than the animals. Sometimes people envy the animals and they think, I wish I could run fast like a gazelle. Don't worry about it. Just take what asset you've been given so that you can be properly situated and take full advantage of it. Then you'll feel happy. Because we take, by alignment, proper alignment, we attain harmony in life. So what is the proper alignment? We're told that in the verse today, is to realize the asset that you do have, and take advantage of the asset to the best of your ability in the human form of life. So one of the ways in which to do this is to pay attention. Because from moment to moment, what we really have as our main asset is the ability to point our attention in a particular direction. So be aware that in every moment, where we're placing our attention makes a difference, because where attention goes, energy flows. Wherever we place our attention in life, our energy will go in that direction and will develop in that area. So even if you're not expert at something right now, if you put your attention to practicing it, and once I asked my brother, who's a musician and he teaches music, I said, so what's the secret to learning things, memorizing and so forth? We were having a discussion about it. And he said, in my opinion, paying attention while you're doing it makes the biggest difference, because you can play a piece over and over and over again, but you might be thinking of something else. Your mind might be somewhere else, and you won't be able to go deeply within it. But if you pay attention to what you're doing, then you'll get the most value out of it. And this is a practice. Krishna recommends in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that wherever your mind wanders, bring your attention back to the self and keep concentrating. So it's a good time to practice when you're doing your sadhana, for instance, in chanting japa, and practicing bringing the attention back to the mantra itself. And it's actually more pleasurable to do that than it is to chant japa and not pay attention. Don't you think? The mind will protest, because it's like an unruly dog. I once met a dog that was taken in by a so-called benevolent master, but he never trained it. And it was like a little wild fury. He would jump all over you, run here and there. It doesn't matter what the master said, because by the time he grew up, he had become completely spoiled. And I was thinking of that as being synonymous with the uncontrolled mind. A little Tasmanian wild devil was that dog. And the mind, when it's left to its own devices, becomes wild also and goes here and there. But if one just practices every day focusing one's attention on the task at hand, even if you do it intensely for a short period of time, you'll notice the results. The tivrena bhakti yogina. When you do bhakti, Shukadeva Goswami says, do it with full focus. And put the emotional intensity into it also. Remember this verse that I'm a human. I've been given a unique opportunity, and I have a limited amount of time. I don't even know how much. If you could invest your full emotion, there are many different kinds of emotion that you can invest in your bhakti practice. For instance, one of them is a sense of urgency, if that can be called an emotion. Let's ask Samya Prash. Could we call that? Okay, the judges said yes. What are other emotions that you might invest? Let's just say in the context of chanting japa. What kind of other emotion can you put forward? Have you ever, for instance, have you ever played a game with emotion? I bring this up because someone was asking me in one of the other places we were recently, how it is that you can do your work and at the same time remember Krishna. Because you're sitting there in a cubicle, if I'm not mistaken, and you're looking at a screen and there's a lot of numbers going by, and you're organizing them in various ways. So how do you do it at the same time? And I remembered several incidents that I've seen in the world of competition and sports, like at the Olympics and things, when somebody's mother dies, for instance, and they've been practicing for 12 years to go out and play the sport they're going to play. Let's say it's field hockey. Is that in the Olympics? Judges? Okay, yes. So, and then the night before the Olympic Games starts and they go to play field hockey, the guy's mother dies. And everyone says, is he going to play? And finally he comes out and he goes, I'm playing this game for my mother. I don't care about anything else. I don't care about the Olympics or my country, but I'm doing this for my mom. And so he gets on the field, and he becomes a great champion suddenly. He's tearing up the field, running back and forth. How could he have such superhuman powers suddenly? Well, it's because he's playing for not for himself, not for his country even. He's playing for his mother, and his mother just died. He's investing his emotion in that. So when one performs one's bhakti, one can sit there and suffer chanting japa because the mind is running little hoops around the room and then out the door and then come back in. And I was like, no, I'm not going to come back in. I'm going to go down to the liquor store and hang out. And so, you know, but if somehow or other one could catch this emotion, and ultimately Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in performing devotional service, there are various stages at which one's invested. The first one is out of fear. He said, I fear material existence, and therefore I just somehow I stay in bounds because I know that I'm going to get chopped into little pieces if I stick my toe out the door again. And I have some kind of awareness of this. Of course, people can lose that and then get chopped to pieces again. That's another story. And then after that, he says, there's a sense of prospect. One's performing devotional service because they think, what am I going to get in return? And then after that, he said, there's duty. And above that, he said, there's love. And that love is the most powerful emotion of all. What other kind of emotions can you invest in your bhakti practice? I'm thinking of one now. If you can't think of one, you can do a Vulcan mind meld and figure out what I'm thinking. And what? That's what I was thinking. Thank you, Ananda. We're so much in sync. Gratitude. Yes, just think how powerful gratitude is. If you're performing your service and you feel grateful, why would you feel grateful, Ananda?
Because Krishna and his name is not different. And I mean, everyone is looking after Krishna, trying to become satisfied in this material world. And by the mercy of the Vaishnavas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Krishna himself descending as his holy name, that we have that opportunity to interact and experience Krishna and actually fulfill our innermost desire.
So you're feeling grateful that Krishna came to get you.
Yeah.
He extended himself to me, I'm thinking. And they're very nice. What other ways in which could you be grateful, or is there another emotion? Go ahead.
Another emotion? Desperation.
Oh, tell us about that.
Well, Prabhupada said that we should chant like a child crying for his mother.
Yes.
So that's a really desperate mood, really desperate emotion.
And, yes.
In the very, 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 very rare circumstances I've been able to tap into that, I found that to be possibly the most powerful chanting I've experienced.
Isn't it amazing how dull life can be without the power of emotion behind one's life? In other words, one can go on by rote. One can go on feeling bored. People even sometimes commit suicide because they think, oh, life's so boring. Or they take intoxication because they think life's boring. Let me spice it up a little bit by, you know, drinking some lighter fluid or something like that. And they think, wow, that was interesting. But actually, life is interesting already. You don't have to drink a caustic substance to see the beauty of the world. It's actually right there. And emotion can bring it out. And if one can harness that. In fact, we hear verses from the Bhagavat, from Sri Brahma Samhita, Yam Krodha Kama Sahaja Pranayadi Piti Batsalya Moha Guru Gaurava Sevya Bhava Sanchintya Tasya Sadrishin Tanama Purete Govindamari Purusham Tamahamajami. The Lord Brahma is saying that Yam Krodha, by some people they become really angry at Krishna. And this, the devotees say, this is good, this is good. Look at how intense he is. In fact, Narada Muni is saying, I wish I could be that intense as the demons. The demons are better than me because look how they become so angry. And they're just thinking of Krishna 24 hours. They can't stop thinking of him overnight. They're just, he's coming in their mind constantly. Like, how can I eradicate Krishna from the earth and all of his people and everyone? Let me kill Krishna. In fact, Prabhupada used to say, when we're out on Sankirtan, sometimes people would come through the airports or wherever we were and they'd curse us and they'd say, Hare Krishna, get out of here. And Prabhupada would say, he's thinking, oh, you rascal Krishna man. And because he's so intensely thinking of Krishna, he's thinking, he's putting his emotion behind this, you rascal Krishna man. What sticks is the Krishna part. It goes deeply within. So krodha, there's anger for Krishna. Kama, this feeling of intense lust that one sees the beauty of Krishna. Even the sages at Dandakaranya, they were sitting there and they saw Lord Ramachandra and they just became so attracted to them. They said, you know, we'd like to marry you or something. And he accepted silently their wish, you know, because they had that intense desire. He said, okay. Oh, but not this time, because I only have one wife. This is Maryada. I'm showing by example. But when I come back as Krishna, you can join the party. And there they are up there. See in that picture, the Rasa dance? Those same sages, they came as some of the groups of gopis. They were allowed to enter the Rasa dance because, krodha, kama, because they had some emotionally charged feeling for Krishna. And then yam krodha kama sahaja. Sahaja means natural friendly love. And he goes, I'd like to hang out with Krishna. I want a friend like that. Can I have a friend like that? And sahaja pranayati piti. And then there's fear of Krishna. People become afraid. And they're like Kamsa became afraid. And then when you're afraid, you just can't stop thinking of the person. And so investing emotion in one's devotional practice, it's extremely powerful if one can cultivate this kind. And then, for instance, if you're chanting your japa, if you can harness the emotion that you have there when you're chanting, find some emotion and harness it as you're chanting and put your heart into it, lean into it hard. And remember, I've got this human body, I can do this. That's one nice thing about being a human. Humans are very emotional. They can get attached to it. They can go to a movie, start crying, think about it for a week. I can't get over it. They get attached to people. And bhakti is just like that. Actually, it really resembles this way in which people get attached in the material world. Sanatana Goswami and others are saying, it's the same thing, only just transfer it to Krishna. You've got all these emotions and capabilities of conjuring them up. And people do it all the time because that's the only happiness in life. Is actually, that's where the rasa comes from. It's the emotions we exchange in life to bring out the emotion. And that's what all the literature's for. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sit at the end of his life before he left the planet with Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar. And they would sing passages from these of books about Krishna and the spiritual world that would evoke his emotions. In fact, this is the whole process of devotional service, to bring these emotions out. And so if one becomes carried away by the natural emotions that are there in this human body, but channels them to Krishna, that's the practice of bhakti, then one's devotional service becomes very intense and powerful. So the next point is something that I found on a billboard. And it said, it was an advertisement for insurance. And it said, safety is no accident. And I really like that statement. Safety is no accident. It's kind of witty, don't you think? Do you think it's witty? Witty? Oh, you know what means witty. Swami Prash, tell them what witty means.
Clever.
Yeah, it's clever, intelligent. It has like a double meaning to it, kind of. Safety is no accident. Like, what? Double entendre? I don't know if it meets the... Oxymoron is more like contradictory. This has a double meaning.
It's a play with words.
Play with words. Yeah, so it's a play with words, and you say safety is no accident. So there's a subtle meaning there that if you prepare yourself, then you won't have an accident. And then the other thing is, what's the other thing?
It's deliberate.
You have to intentionally make. Isn't that what I just said?
No, but you said something else. You said both.
Okay, so anyway, we covered both. See, it's so subtle, you can barely catch it. That's why I like it. Okay, so safety is no accident. It means that in order to be safe, you have to prepare yourself. It's not. It doesn't happen by accident, safety. You have to prepare yourself. And if you prepare yourself, then you won't have accidents. Now I got it. Okay, so this is another aspect of practice of devotional service. Besides investing your emotions and harnessing them so you can keep your attention and have very intense tivrena bhakti, you also have to be careful. Prepare yourself because human beings are very vulnerable. We're vulnerable to the environment, both external and internal. There are a lot of kinds of distractions that can come into our life and that can carry us away from the practice of devotional service. So one should be very careful in practicing devotional service and fortify one's life so that one can't be attacked by Maya. Because if you leave an opening, then Maya will get in. It's like identity theft. If you're not careful with your passwords, can you tell us more about identity theft and how to protect yourself?
They can hack into your system.
They can hack in, but how do you protect it?
Install antivirus or something.
Antivirus system, yes. You have to have an antivirus system. So, because when you have internet access, you have your software on your computer, there are all kinds of little programs that insert themselves into your program and then they take over. Correct? For instance, there's adware. Adware, if you go to a website, the adware can attach itself to your system, and then even after you go off that website, the ads will keep popping up every time you turn on your computer. And they'll say, yeah, buy this lemonade. You know, you got to have this. It'll keep bringing it up over and over again. And then there's malware. Do I sound like I know what I'm talking about? Malware that gets in and it interferes with the way your system operates. So the antivirus software, it goes in there, it cleans things up, it rearranges everything, it kicks everything else out. So you have to be careful to run your antivirus software every day. That's the Bhagavatam. So when you run the Bhagavatam program through your system every day, this is an antivirus, anti-malware program. Because just walking around within a 12-hour period, you're going to pick up a lot of malware. And it'll come back. There's things running, programs running that you don't even know from previous lives, little bugs that'll come into the system. So every day you have to get up, and this way say, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, you have to run your antivirus program. So Krishna, this is Suta Goswami says, Shrinvatam Swa Kata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantaksto Hibhadrani Vitunoti Suritsutam. Vitunoti means it's a program that runs that kicks out all the antivirus so your brain will function properly and you won't become disturbed by these various adwares. People make all kinds of suggestions. Hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And then when you have run your adware, you say, why don't we not do that? Why don't we just focus on our bhakti? And you go take a hike, and I'll keep doing what I'm doing. Yes?
On that safety, most of the observations are accidents happen when one is practicing safety, but over a period of time, one thinks I'm safe because I've been doing this for a while. And suddenly one day, one realizes that, you know, it's because of me and not because of the safety practice. Mm. So similarly also, how do we not feel like that when we're doing the same thing and we can get immune? And suddenly we realize that, oh, I didn't expect this. It suddenly happens and it's actually not suddenly. You
know? Part of being humble, the Trinadapi Sunichena, the spirit of that verse, there's so many nuances in that verse that you can explore. But one of them is remaining a neophyte. Stay a neophyte. Don't become sophisticated. You may be proficient in what you do and responsible, but keep a neophyte's mentality that I'm a beginner. I don't deserve anything. I have no entitlements. And I also don't know anything. Start over every day as if you're the most vulnerable person, and that consider that every day is that it's the first time you just started, and don't take things for granted, because that's one of the ways in which you're right. In safety systems, people become overconfident and they think, I'm already fortified, I'm good. And so Prabhupada mentions that in his purports about this point about being careful, that you shouldn't think I'm liberated. Sometimes people, they practice devotional service for some time, they get respect, and then they might mistakenly think that I'm liberated. Well, gosh, maybe they even are. But it's a mistake to take advantage of that, because then one might take liberties. And when you take liberties with Maya, she'll take liberties with you. So it's safer to continually consider oneself not liberated, and therefore not eligible to take liberties and to leave oneself open. The moment you leave yourself open, you can be victimized. So be really careful in that way. Don't become complacent. Yes?
I just wanted to clarify, you were speaking about someone that posed the question, how do I work and still remember Krishna? I'm supposed to be so engaged. And then you gave the example of that athlete whose mother dies, and because of his emotion, performs his sport so dexterously and more expertly, because he's doing it for someone else. So then was kind of the conclusion is how to do that is we have to cultivate that emotion when we're doing our sadhana. And you said harness that emotion. So then when we go to work and when we go to someplace, then we're engaging that harnessed emotion.
Correct. In the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada in a purport says that when one does one's regular work, just regular work, one should consider that I'm doing this as my allotted service for Krishna. And when you do that, you consider I'm doing this for Krishna, then it changes in its quality. What you're doing changes. Okay, Nagar, then Sean.
I just wanted to reflect that I really liked your point about the programs. You know, one devotee in India, Madhav Prabhu, he was telling me that, you know, when the mind, because sometimes I was saying, you know, my mind has these things I don't want to think about. I don't know why I'm thinking about such crazy things. And he said, just see it like a broken computer. Just see it like a broken computer, and that, you know, it has glitches, and just kind of, it's a broken computer, and you're working on fixing it. I just like that idea that the mind or the body, it's just like a robot. It's a computer. It's just to kind of have that view of it. Okay, these programs from previous lives or this life, these viruses, they're stuck with me, but they're not actually part of, you know, a normal functioning computer. I don't know, it just kind of gave me a sense of relief, that vision of the mind.
Yeah, you can troubleshoot that way and be detached from situations. It's just, yeah, it's acting in a aberrant way, and I'll fix it. And we had this experience this year when we were at Govardhan, still this year. Yeah, we were at Govardhan, and we did a full cleaning of the system by hearing Bhagavatam for minimum five hours a day. And who was there? And it rearranged. You can feel it. You can watch it happen to your subtle body by sitting and hearing Bhagavatam very attentively. That your subtle body becomes refined and put in tip-top shape again, ready to run. And the world, then one can see the world in the right perspective after hearing Bhagavatam. But if you go long time period of time without hearing, or even a short period of time, then perspective then can become contaminated again. You can think, oh, this world's for enjoyment. Maybe I'll just be happy here. And then you start to slide. Bhaktishan, and then we'll come over here.
One of your first instructions to me when I spoke with you last year about taking shelter with you was to keep the vibration high. Mm. And at the temple in Tucson, I use humor as a means to move through things, and I'm known for that. And, you know, I joke with Sindamani, and my relationship with Krishna, what of my emotions? I don't know if humor is a mood.
Yeah, sorry, hasya ras.
Oh.
It's a rasa. And it goes with most of the other rasas. Hasya ras.
And I'm greatly appreciating this need to really be more serious about the nature of our reality and what we're dealing with. So I guess my question is, where do I draw the line between Monty Python reality in a very loving way?
Well, humor is very important. In fact, throughout human society, humor is used as a way to look at reality in a safe way without freaking out. Because people, when they look at the world and they think, wow, it's really messed up, what am I going to do now? Then the comedians come out and they start telling jokes about it, and everyone feels some relief because, like, boy, I couldn't say it like that. So it's a very important device for actually processing reality. And we have to have comedians, because the hasya ras pervades Krishna's all of the ways in which he relates with his friends. He's always cracking jokes. And you know, very humorous person, Krishna. So, you know, he keeps friends around him that are always cracking everything up. And as a spice, in the right, at the right times and places, humor can be very important and helpful in helping us to see things in a new perspective, in a safe way, because you can tell a joke about it, and if it's done properly, of course, you can blow it too, and everyone will go like, get out of here. but it is helpful. If it's done especially in a Krishna conscious way, telling jokes. For instance, you know, this, who's that genius who does all the impersonations? He has that one of the brahmachari. Yama Niyama Das Brahmachari. What's the devotee's name?
Huh? Yadunath or something?
Ekanath. Yeah, he's a comedic genius. And so, Akendra. So when I went, I used to skip those things. I go to the Festival of Inspiration, and it's like, it's late at night, they're telling jokes, you know, I'll read Gita, go to bed. So when one year I just said, I'm going to stay, I'm going to watch this. So I was sitting there watching, and before he came on, Anutama comes out and he goes, now let me tell you, before you, all you stanchos out there, you know, think this is Maya, he said, the anti-cultists who I deal with all the time say, well, the first symptom of a cult member is someone who can't laugh at himself. As an organization, they can't look back at themselves and criticize their own program. You know, they're like, you can't say that. And so he said, you know, just relax, everybody. You know, this is a new realm you're entering into. I haven't laughed so hard in years. And it's a kind of introspection, but it's done in the context of humor, so you can actually dissect everything and deconstruct it in a safe way. Because, hey, it's just a joke, you know, lighten up. And then you can actually improve. So it's very important. Yes, Mataji, you had a point, and we'll come back to Samyaprash.
Sorry, thank you, Prabhu. It's just a reflection of what you said earlier on about people who don't take spiritual life seriously and they think it's a waste of time what we're doing. Like famous monk said that if you don't have like say 5 minutes of your day to do spiritual practice or meditation because you're busy, then you should meditate for 20 minutes. So you should like take more time out and do more practice because it's needed.
Yes, very important. That it brings to a point also about taking advantage of our rare human form of life, and that is make sure that you cover your basics every day. This is a principle that will serve you throughout your life in practicing any discipline. but in the bhakti practice, find out what are the most essential of all practices and make sure that you cover them every day. Don't skip your basics. It's just like in diet. You have to be careful to perform the basic things that really make you healthy. One of them is intermittent fasting. Don't eat all the time and every day. Fast sometimes. Stop eating and let the body repair itself. And then when you're really hungry, then eat. And then it can really digest. And this is a basic of nutrition. Don't stuff yourself. Don't overeat. Things like that. And also eat a rainbow diet. Eat things that have color in them and stuff like that. So if you stick to a couple of basics like that in diet, those are very basic things. You just integrate them into your life, then you'll have a healthy constitution, because diet is very important in your life. So similarly, if you find out two or three things that are essential for your bhakti health, and you keep to those, don't neglect them. So there are ways in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advocates this. For instance, when he's teaching Sanatana Goswami, he teaches 64 items of devotional service, correct? Correct. And then he boils it down and he says, listen, here's five out of the 64. And he names these five. And he said, these five are so powerful that even if you don't have faith in them, if you keep a little connection to these throughout your life, then you'll attain perfection, because they're so amazingly powerful. Chanting Hare Krishna, worshiping the deity, associating with devotees, living in a holy dham, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and the association of like-minded devotees who are more advanced than self. So you may go through periods of your life where you're asked to move to a place where it's a little more remote. You can't get to the temple as much as you wanted to. You can't do everything you wanted to. So therefore, cover your basics. Make sure that that's in your package when you sign the contract, that you get to do your five basic things every day and keep at least a little contact with them. And then you'll be maintained throughout your life, and you'll go through the various periods of your life, which may be difficult with grand style, because these will sustain you. Samyaprash Prabhu.
I was just reflecting. I wanted to add something about the
and
humor
then we're
thing.
Coming back over to Vrindavan.
Because I heard Vrindavan. From one sadhu, once sannyasi in our movement, who they were introspecting on this, the nature of humor, and they're pointing out, because actually when someone kind of, you know, they fall down on and they do a pratfall, it doesn't work out for them. That's funny. If someone does something successful, it's not funny. And his thesis was that humor is actually part of the universe's way of showing to us that you can't be happy here in the material world. It doesn't work out. So when something doesn't work out and you notice that in an intelligent way, that's humor. It's actually designed in the mind to notice how this material world is not a place for me to enjoy, even though I'm trying really, really hard.
Yeah.
So he was pointing out that actually it has a transcendental purpose.
It does. And also, much of humor is self-deprecation. When people self-deprecate, then people, they like it. And it's an accept. And if you're self-deprecating all the time, and you're not doing it in the context of humor, then people's like, all right, that's enough. You know, get over it. But in humor, you're allowed that time to actually dissect and say, "See how fallen I am? Look at this." Vrinda Sundari has a point. Let's see if that wire will make it.
Haribo.
It did it. We did it. It's a Herculean task.
Okay. I like the point about the human life being most valuable, and that the emotions, putting emotions in it. And my kids were watching this little Krishna video, and Krishna says to Lord Brahma after he steals the cows, and he says, my friends, the residents of Vrindavan, their love for me is pure and intense. And I was thinking, intense? Wow, it's intense. And I was thinking how this point about the human experience and emotions, how it seems like if the human experience is the most important for self-realization, then it means that every moment of our experience is we have self-realization available to us. And that if I pay attention to what's happening, then I can become self-realized in that moment. And so, like, not just, you know, paying attention to the emotions that I'm experiencing because of that experience, that can actually help me become self-realized. It's like designed, this experience is designed just so that I can go back to Krishna somehow.
Yeah, it's a really nice extrapolation from the verse today, of the meaning of the verse, is that this brief encounter we have in this human life, which is lauded everywhere. We hear all these verses, labvam sadur labvam idam bahusambhavante manushyam artadam anitam api hadira. This is in the Bhagavatam, says, it's so rare, it's so rare, it's so rare. You really got to something here. You got it after millions of births, and it's something you can't buy. It's so valuable, and it's temporary. Keep in mind, it'll go away at any second, but artadam, you can get everything now. It's all available. And the fact that Krishna's personal form is always manifest, I just can't see it because of the way I'm looking at the world. He's always here. He's there. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santaksadeva hridayeshu. I had this experience once when I was going through Europe. I got to Scotland and I went to the temple there. And you know, sometimes when you go to a new environment and then the sun comes up, it's the first time you've been there and you see things. And I was seeing the pictures on the wall and stuff, and I think, wow, Krishna's here, his personal form. And I was just thinking how he's always there, but I don't see him because I'm looking elsewhere. I'm looking for something else. In fact, when I first came to the Hare Krishna temple, I had been practicing all kinds of spiritual things. I'd even, out of a book, I'd taken a mantra. It was Rama. He said, in the book, it was called Be Here Now, it said, you know, chant Rama and see God within everything. So I'd walk to school and it was Rama, 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 Rama. And I'd look at everything and I'd see God's within everything. And I was so used to that when I got to the temple, finally, because I was really attracted to this idea, you know, all the things I saw in the Back to Godhead magazine. It was just a cascade of opulent images and just, you know, like, what I had been getting little drips of here, dribs and drabs, was coming from a fire hose now. And when I saw, you know, what was available, so I got to the temple, and there was this flood. And now, you know, people showed me, there's the deities. And so I was so used to looking at nature, I couldn't see the deities. It took me about 3 or 4 weeks before someone was like, no, no, you look here, because I was looking at the flowers. I was looking at the flowers on the altar, and I was like, yeah. God's there, you know? Like, and they're like, no, no, the deities. And I remember also when it started to change, we were listening to the Bhagavatam class, they were in the first canto, and it was a description of Krishna interacting with his queens. And our temple president, Bhutatma Prabhu, was giving a class, and he was reading the verse, and I was sitting there, and it talked about how the queens were so attached to Krishna, they couldn't quit those lotus feet. And just that phrase, I was thinking, oh, the Lord has feet. He's actually a person. It dawned up just from hearing the Bhagavatam, and my vision started to change, and I started to see the deity because of the association of devotees and the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And so Krishna is always there. His personal form is always manifest, but it's hidden from those whose attention has become diverted because of the enjoying spirit and sense gratification. Anando.
Just real quick. Yes. For those who are online, if you want to text in a question or comment, it's 720-231-6302. 720-231-6302. Hare Krishna.
Our operators are standing by to take your calls.
Also, the verse about not being able to quit the Lord's lotus feet, 1:11:33 for those who want to relish.
1:11:33.
Kind of going along with Vrindasundari Mataji's point and appreciating a point you were making earlier about how congenial the path of bhakti is for the living entity who's having this human experience, dealing with emotions and relationships, and how congenial it is to then transfer that to devotion to Krishna. And in contrast with this idea of becoming detached and void of emotion and void of feeling, how inconsistent that is with our experience. But just appreciating this point that For example, like if you're speaking with someone from a distance, you know, and you hear from them and you talk to them, you develop some attachment for them. But then the experience of being with them in person and traveling with them and physically being in their presence, then that attachment and that longing grows. And then when you're not in their presence, then how much more longing there is for that. And so I was thinking that I don't long for Krishna because I don't remember what it's like to be with Krishna. And I'm not paying attention enough to be with Krishna in His holy name. So therefore I don't have a longing. But if I was attentive to chanting and I began to experience Krishna in His name, how much more that affection and that longing. And I'm appreciating this because this is a realization I'm having from like a factual experience that I'm just having in my human existence. You know?
Yes. And very well put. Thank you very much. Human life, we're used to, and we can relate to entanglement. Can everyone relate to being entangled?
Yes.
Yes. So this is actually the human experience, being entangled. That's why people like soap operas. If you were to write a soap opera, and you would be good at it, what you do is you figure out how to get the characters entangled in the worst possible ways. I mean, this person's supposed to be the head of the hospital, and, you know, actually he's having an affair on the side, and then, I mean, there's like six different things that's going on in his life, and you're going, oh my God. And that's why, like, millions of people tune every day, because they want to see the entanglement. It's like, how's he going to get out of this? And that's actually the human experience. That's what we're used to. This idea of void, we just can't accommodate it. The void, nothing. I don't want void. I want entanglement. And that's what Vrindavan is. When you start to get to Krishna's pastimes and the intimate pastimes Krishna has with his devotees, it's all about entanglement. Krishna comes home at night, or in the afternoon, and his mother Yashoda feeds him and everything. And then he's like, okay, go to bed now. And then he sneaks out the window. He goes out the window and he's playing with his friends all night and hanging out with the gopis. And then, you know, he gets back in and she can't figure out why he's got scratches all over his body. Because, like, he has these amorous pastimes and the gopis are scratching him. And then his mother thinks, you're getting caught in the bushes. And there's these different levels going on with Krishna meeting secretly. And then this whole entanglement, it's the ultimate soap opera. It's where they all come from. And that's what we're used to in the human form of life. That's where it comes out. So bhakti's more natural because it's transferring that sense of entanglement, that heavy emotion that carries us away. If you read the poems of the acharyas, they're carried away by these emotions. We don't want renunciation. We want to be carried away. We want to be entangled like anything. But if you get entangled in the material world, it's called khlada tapatrai. It means that you're getting trounced by the material energy. And you just suffer because of your entanglement. But when you transfer it to Krishna and to Vraj, if you can get entangled through hearing the pastimes of Krishna and it starts to catch on in your mind and you get just as attached to that as you might a series of soap operas, then you start to get traction in spiritual life and then you start to get safe because you're not interested in anything else. It's a higher taste. Vishaya vinivartante nirahara siddehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishva nirvartate. That's what seeing the Supreme means, is getting tangled in Krishna Katha. So we have one from the internet, and then we'll have to wrap it up.
There's a couple over here.
Oh, yes, Prabhu.
Yes. I'm very grateful to be here in your presence and with all these beautiful friends. But on emotions, on the emotion of compassion, and the subject of cause and effect, how do we console one who's had maybe misfortune, and they come to us who practice Krishna consciousness, and when one has had misfortune, and perhaps the misfortune is fresh, humor may not apply, but we want to represent our love for Krishna. So I'd like to hear just some thoughts on that.
Yeah, prasadam's there, which is kind of love. I might have my own experience. You know, having cultivated Krishna consciousness for many years, and then I was youngest in my family, my parents were getting older, I was thinking, so how will I deal with it when my parents die? Because I had a very good relationship with them, very attached to both my mother and father. And so then I used to ask devotees, so how do you deal with it? Are your mother and father still alive? They say, no, one's gone. I said, so what do you do? You know, how do you apply Krishna consciousness when there's something that's that close to your heart happens, some attachment gets broken, you know, is it possible to deal with it? And they tell me different things. But you can't know until it happens. And I was sitting in Vrindavan. My father had passed away, and I was Nirkula was back in the States, and she called me. I think it was 1 a.m. The phone rang, and that eerie sound of the phone ringing at 1 a.m. I knew my father had died because he was already in hospice. And then, you know, she said, you know, he's gone. So then I became philosophical. I was sitting there chanting my japa, you know, till like time for Mangalarti. When Mangalarti came back to my room, and it was at the MVT, so I was on the second floor, and then I came back down. But I was feeling like heavy-hearted, very heavy-hearted. And when I walked down the stairs, Dhruva and Samyapriya had the apartment down below, God brother, God sister. So Samyapriya looks at me and she goes, what's wrong? Because she could tell just by looking at me that something had happened. And I said, my father just died. And she goes, oh! And she just hugged me like a mother. And then it happened again. There was this devotee from South America, very gregarious, a devotee, kind of a scholar person. He came along and he had heard my father died. So he came over and he gave me a hug. And he said, you know, he referred to my dear father, your dear father has died, you know, I have to give you a hug. And there was a way that just by those two encounters with devotees who just showed natural compassion, just ordinary, like, solace that they were giving, and it helped me on that level to then be able to balance myself and take full advantage of being philosophical and aligning myself with that. So we have to, in the early days of ISKCON, there was a way in which everyone would, when somebody would die or something would happen, there was a way that devotees would just say, ah, just ignore it, it'll go away, you're not your body anyway. Which reminded me of a story that I'll close with Mahamuni Prabhu, once he had the flu, and he had this really high fever, and he was in the Brahmacharya ashram, and he leaned up on his... Leela, is that Leela? Pritaribo Prita. He groaned because he had this high fever and he was suffering there in a sleeping bag in the corner of the Brahmacharya ashram. So one of the new bhaktas was there, was brushing his teeth in the corner over there at the sink, and then he heard Mom Mooney groan. So this new bhakta thought he'd give some free advice. So he turns to Mom Mooney and he goes, Prabhu, you're not your body. And Mahamuni gathers all his strength and he gets up on his elbow and he leans up, looks over to see who said it. And it's Bhakta over there with his toothbrush. And he says, Prabhu, you're not my body either. And it just, there's a point at which we mentioned in the class the other day, there's two levels we're existing on. We have an emotional physical body. And when you get cut, you're going to bleed. And similarly, emotionally, when you get cut from an ordinary thing, like your mother dying, something's going to happen. There's a subtle umbilical cord that's still attached to your mother, your father, and to your loved ones. And that'll happen. You have to go, still you'll go through a grieving process. But it's not the same because you're able to process that. You have somewhere to go with it. You have a way, the ways and means to process the whole thing. And the extra benefit or the ultimate benefit is that you get to feel deeply. It's one of those teachable moments when you feel so deeply, like how do I feel so deeply as somebody dies and you feel to the bottom of your heart that human emotion. That's the kind of emotion that resembles what the devotees have when Krishna goes away and they're suffering like anything, but it's actually nectar. Because it's in the spiritual realm. But But we can transfer that. We can realize what it is because of our philosophy of bhakti, what that intense feeling is like. And then we can relate and say, that's what Vrindavan is. That's what Vrindavan life is with. That intense emotion for Krishna, which is at all times, you know, pulling us closer to him and with deep, deep feeling. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. NBA ki jai. Go premanande hari hari bol. That's New Bharat Ashram, by the way. Nitai goda hari bol. Hari bol. Hari bol. Nitai goda hari bol. Nitai goda hari bol. Hari bol. Nitai goda hari
His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu ki jai.